Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 50. I am your host, Kevin Schaefer, and I am here with my co-host, Michael Morale. Michael, how are you today?
Doing great, Kevin. How about you?
Doing great. Really excited to be here. I was just saying right before we started recording, it's pretty crazy that we made it to episode 50 here. I just want to take a quick moment to thank all of our listeners out there, whether you listen to my interviews, which is how this podcast started, or Michael and I's discussions, or both, preferably. This has been a really great journey, and I'm excited for another 50 episodes, hopefully. So I'm really excited to be here. So today we have the first roundtable discussion of the year for everyone, and in this one we're going to be talking primarily about risdiplam in the news section, and some of this information may be a little repetitive if you've listened to the podcast before, but it's really important nonetheless now that risdiplam is under review by the FDA and is a big topic of discussion within the SMA community. So we'll definitely be talking about that. And we will also be discussing some of our recent columns. So really looking forward to it. But so Michael, to start off, we do have one news story about risdiplam here. And for our listeners out there, we'll have this linked, but this is titled Roche Starts Early Access Program for SMA Therapy Risdiplam in Europe. And so the headline does kind of say it, but Michael, can you give us just a brief overview of this article? And I think that'll lead nicely into talking about the rest of this topic here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, the article just talked about the European Medicines Agency. Roche has basically kicked off a worldwide early access program for its experimental therapy known as risdiplam by making it available to Europeans with the most serious forms of spinal muscular atrophy. Right now, they're talking about SMA type 1, and then in about 6 months, it will be available to individuals with SMA type 2. Now, Roche is the European company, and then Genentech is its American subsidiary.
Okay. Right.
So Genentech is Roche's U.S. subsidiary, and you may hear us refer to them as Roche Genentech.
Okay. Right.
So just please know the difference. But talked about a little bit about risdiplam and how they're going to make it available to the SMA type 1 and type 2 communities. And then they went into a little bit of information that we'll cover here in just a minute with some other questions. But it's fascinating to see the progress that modern science has made because, you know, if you think about it, 5 years ago, we didn't have anything. And you and I are starting our third year of Spinraza. And if I would have asked you 4 years ago, do you think you would be on treatment for 3 years? You probably would have said no. So it's just amazing how fast these treatments are coming to fruition and how quickly the FDA is approving these unbelievable new treatments for those of us with SMA. So that's basically what the article talked about. And what we can do is we can probably link the article. If you're listening to us on our SoundCloud platform, you can go in there and you can look in the description and we can provide a link to this article as well.
Absolutely. We'll have it in there for sure. And you can find it on our main site at smanewstoday.com as well. Thank you, Michael. And thank you for clarifying that about Roche as well, because I know that can be kind of confusing. I was at a conference a few months ago and a representative who was working on risdiplam said that they actually prefer to be classified almost as one company as Roche Genentech because they work hand in hand. And like you said, it's the American and European sides. So just thank you for that clarification there. Great. Well, thank you for summing that up. And I think that leads nicely into just some questions. And a lot of these are questions, Michael, that you've received by subscribers to your personal YouTube channel. And, you know, we've gotten either on Facebook or forums or whatever. Because like I said, it's now that the drug is under FDA approval, people have a lot of questions about when it'll be available and what audience in the SMA community it's designed for. So my first question is that now the risdiplam is under review, what are your thoughts regarding its potential impact for those of us who have SMA?
You know, I think the potential impact for Risdiplam, in my opinion, and a lot of people may disagree with this, but I see the announcement as far as the approval for Risdiplam. Right now, they're saying that it's going to be on or before May 24th of this year, 2020. But personally, I think it's going to come before then, but that's just my gut feeling. And you also have to remember that the answers that I'm going to be giving to these questions are my opinions.
Okay? Right. It's
I'm
all
not
speculative
a doctor.
Here.
I don't play one on TV. I'm just giving you my honest opinions through my gut feelings. And usually my gut feelings have been pretty spot on lately. So with regards to the potential impact that I see Risdiplam having, personally, I think it's going to be bigger than Spinraza and Risdiplam. And then
Zolgensma. Yeah,
I think it's going to be bigger. And the reason why I say that was, or is because Spinraza is given intrathecally, and a lot of people may not be able to receive their Spinraza injections because they've had spinal fusion and doctors cannot access the central nervous system. That's the reason why it has to be given intrathecally, whether it be through your back, your side, or your neck. So all of those types of injections are considered intrathecal because they have to target the central nervous system. And then Zolgensma, right now, is only available to infants and toddlers 2 years of age or younger. So there's some limitations with regards to those treatments. The reason why I'm excited about Risdiplam is because it's going to be a liquid oral medicine that we drink. Now, do we drink it once a day, once a week, once a month? We don't know. That's going to be determined through the FDA. When they eventually give their approval, which I think they will, then the FDA will write the label. Then at that point, we'll know what the dosing amount is going to be. But I see this being such a huge potential because now it eliminates some of the problems that people faced with Spinraza and not having an opening in their central nervous system. It's going to open it up because anybody can drink it. So there's not going to be any hospitalization. There's not going to be the cost associated with some of the things that we're having to go through. Now, I'm in no way discounting Spinraza or Zolgensma. Okay? Spinraza has been wonderful for me. I've had absolutely no complaints. I've seen some good benefits from it. I think a lot of my benefits have also been through physical therapy. But, you know, I owe Biogen Pharmaceuticals a great deal because they put me on their free drug program. And I would have been a spectator instead of a participant if it hadn't have been for them. So while I'm not discounting Spinraza or Zolgensma, I'm just saying that Risdiplam will be opened to a wider market. And I think that's going to be one of the major advantages of it.
Oh, I agree. You know, and it's and I think that it's okay to celebrate, you know, multiple treatments. It's a really cool thing that we have those options, like you said. So it'll be really cool to see where it goes from here. But and Michael, along those lines too, what are some of the key benefits you think that Risdiplam will have on people with SMA?
I think the major benefits will be pretty much what I just said with regards to it being available to just about anybody. Now, we don't know what the age group is going to be that it's going to be passed for. By what I've understood and by what we are hearing is that they're designing Risdiplam to be available to all ages and all types of SMA. They're even coming out with Risdiplam in a powdered form, so if you can't drink it, you can mix it with a liquid and put it through a G-tube if you can't swallow. A lot of people with SMA have the inability to swallow, they don't have the ability to swallow, so they use a G-tube, so it'll also be available that way. There's just so many benefits. Again, no hospitalization, no associated cost that you have, you know, with extra doctors. You won't have to go to the hospital once every 4 months. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine that's on his Spinraza, and he lives about probably 20 or 30 miles from where I live. And he said, you know, he doesn't mind going to the hospital once every 4 months. It's not that big of a deal. He said, you know, the injections for the majority of us are pretty much routine now. We don't even think about it. But it would be nice not to have to go to the hospital once a month, not to have a needle jabbed in my back. You know, of course, to me, once they give me the lidocaine, it's really not that big of a deal. But, you know, I know people like yourself that get cervical injections. A friend of mine, Scott, that lives in Fort Worth, he gets his injections through his side. And so sometimes they have a little bit more difficulty and they can strike a nerve a lot easier when they go through your side because the needle is having to travel a longer distance. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that are very uncomfortable with having these intrathecal injections performed. And luckily, they've only hit one nerve on me whenever they gave me my injection. And that, you know, the tingling and the discomfort that I felt only lasted for, you know, a couple of minutes. But I know one of my subscribers to my personal YouTube channel has told me that when they hit a nerve, she can be uncomfortable for 2 or 3 weeks. So there's a lot of benefits that I see with Risdiplam that the other treatments don't offer. So that's why I'm excited about this new treatment coming out. I think it's just going to have a huge impact.
Absolutely. And it'll, you know, as we get closer to the time, it'll be really interesting to see what kind of news comes out. And I'm really interested because it's like I've talked to some people who are on the clinical trial for it, but obviously they're not allowed to speak in depth or anything about it. So it'll be really cool once, you know, even when it does get approved, and then, you know, we can start seeing people experience some of those effects and everything. So it'll be really cool. Next question, we kind of touched on this a little bit ago, but in regards to pay, you know, do you think that insurance companies will agree to pay for someone to take Risdiplam?
I really think they will. And the reason why I'm optimistic about that is because, you know, whenever our biggest challenge, you and me and Deanne, another one of our coworkers that's on Spinraza, the biggest challenge that the three of us faced, and really everybody that started Spinraza faced, was whether or not our insurance companies were going to pay for it, and then trying to find an injection site, a site that was qualified to give the injection. So there's a couple of benefits to Risdiplam, and I think the insurance companies will see these benefits. One is, you know, you're not going to have to go into the hospital, so there's going to be less cost associated with it. Another benefit that I see with regards to insurance companies is that they've had time now to see Spinraza for the last nearly 3 years. They've seen Zolgensma for almost a year. So they're finding that these treatments are working. This is not a shot in the dark. This isn't just a fairy tale dream. You know, they're seeing that a lot of us are experiencing life-changing benefits to this treatment. So with the fact that the FDA is going to be approving Risdiplam, which, and I can't say that they are going to approve it, but I'm going to say that they are going to, just from my gut feeling. But I don't think the insurance companies are going to balk too much, because one of the things that it talks about in the article that we spoke about earlier, the one about the European Medicines Agency, was in the article itself, it said, and I'm going to quote, it said, "We aim to underwhelm with our price for Risdiplam." Bill Anderson, CEO of Roche Pharmaceuticals, was reported as saying at the recent J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference in San Francisco. They know, Roche and Genentech know that the importance of putting this treatment at a price to where people are going to be able to afford it. And the lower that they can get it, they know that their treatment, I say they know, I'm sure that they're aware that if this treatment is an oral medication, it's going to be open to, I think, a much broader market. And so by saying that, they're going to have more people that will probably be taking it. And, you know, it's just pure economics, supply and demand. You know, if they see that they have more people taking it, they can lower the price a little bit and spread the cost over a wider market. Then if there was just, say, 50 to 100,000 people taking it, they would have to price it just to be able to recoup the money from them having to create and develop the treatment itself. So I think the insurance companies are going to see benefits to risdiplam, and I don't think we're going to have any trouble with the insurance companies, whether you have private insurance or you have a state-funded insurance, or, you know, like Medicare, Medicaid. I even think that they will, because I'm on Medicare and they pay for my Spinraza. So if they'll pay for Spinraza, I'm sure that they'll also pay for risdiplam.
Right. And I think you do make a good point about, like, I think companies were more hesitant to when all this started a few years ago because they couldn't see, you know, any results. But now that it, you know, the SMA research is, you know, really taken off in the last, I mean, I don't even want to say taken off in the last few years, just because, I mean, there, it was already advancing before that, but, you know, with available treatments on the market that you can see viable results from, I think that does have a big impact. So it'll be really interesting to see. But I also, that quote really stood out to me as well, so I'm glad you read that. But yeah, so it'll be really cool to see. And Michael, my last question before we transition to the columns, is, you know, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but since Spinraza and risdiplam both work on the SMN2 gene, which is different from how Zolgensma works, but why does Spinraza have to be given intrathecally and then risdiplam can be given orally?
Okay, let me clear up one thing. The reason why Zolgensma works differently is because Zolgensma actually replaces the SMN1 gene.
Right.
Whereas Spinraza and I'm sorry, yeah.
Zolgensma. Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
The SMN1 gene.
Right.
Spinraza and risdiplam will work on the SMN2 gene.
So right.
The reason why we get our Spinraza injections intrathecally is because there's a man-made substance. It's almost a synthetic substance, and it's known as an ASO. And it stands for antisense oligonucleotide. And this man-made or synthetic ASO cannot cross over the blood-brain barrier. So by not being able to cross over the blood-brain barrier, they can't just give it intravenously or through an IV. Now, they can for little infants, but adults like us, they have to target it intrathecally. So that's the reason why that's happening. The only thing that I can think of, and the reason why this oral medication is going to work, is because it doesn't have the ASO. Now, I say it doesn't, but that's just what I'm thinking. We don't know what the actual chemical compound of risdiplam is, but if it's something that can get past the blood-brain barrier, then it must not have that same antisense oligonucleotide. So that's my thinking, and that's the reason why I think risdiplam is going to be able to be given orally, is just because it doesn't have the same chemical compound that what Spinraza does.
That makes sense. You know, it was something I was curious about as well, because I knew, you know, they worked in the same manner. I obviously knew Zolgensma is vastly different because it's gene therapy, but I think that's a really good perspective. So that's really interesting.
Right. You know, here's something else to think about, too. I know that AveXis is working on an intrathecal delivery for Zolgensma, for those of us that are older. But by what I've heard is it too, will be an IT treatment. They will have to target the central nervous system because
right.
They will not be able to get past the blood-brain barrier. So, you know, Spinraza and Zolgensma will, for the adult population, will be an IT delivery.
Right. Awesome. Well, thanks, Michael. I think this is some great information for people out there. If, you know, you're curious about risdiplam, and, you know, I'm sure we'll have more news in the months to come. But thank you. So this is a really great discussion. And shifting gears, I just wanted to talk briefly about a couple of our recent columns. Granted, it is early in the year, so we don't have too many right now, but the first one is one that I wrote that came out last week. And at the time of recording this, it's pretty cool because, and this column is called Let 2020 Be the Year of Disability Representation. It was posted on January 14th. And, you know, for anyone who knows me or has followed my work, you know that I am a very strong advocate for disability representation in various forms of media and you know, it's I've definitely written about this subject multiple times. But what's really cool is that at the beginning of this column, I wrote about how I had recently watched a documentary called The Ataxian, which is from 2015. It's about Kyle Bryant, who's a bicyclist, and he has Friedreich's ataxia. And Friedreich's ataxia is one of the many rare disease communities that the SMA News Today's parent company serves. And so I've gotten to know a lot about FA in over the last year, especially. And Kyle is a really fascinating guy. The documentary is about a 3,000-mile bike race that he did across the United States, and it was so that he could raise awareness for FA. And what's cool is shortly after I wrote this column, I actually got to meet Kyle when I was in Philadelphia about a week ago for work. And it was really cool because I got to meet with him and Matt LaFleur, who is a columnist and forums moderator for our Friedreich's Ataxia website. And it was great. So I got to meet him right after writing this column. And basically, I used that as a jumping off point to talk about how, you know, I love to see stories like this. And I'll read an excerpt real quick from this column. But I just say at one point, I love stories where people with disabilities are front and center. I feel empowered when I see a character who mirrors my own story in some capacity. Still, there are some people who seem to think the media representation isn't worth caring about. Just go on Twitter and you'll see what I mean. And so I think many of us can agree with that sentiment. But yeah, and I also, if you read my column that goes out the same day that this podcast goes up, I talk a little more about that trip in Philadelphia where I got to meet some of my coworkers in person, and it was a really great way to start off the year. But yeah, so I just kind of talk about, you know, I think how disability representation has certainly come a long way, especially in recent years, and there are more shows and movies featuring characters with disabilities, you know, documentaries or fictional. And I think really the gist of the column is I just advocating for more of that. You know, I want to see even more shows and movies like Speechless, for instance, or other shows and movies where disabled characters are front and center. And not only that, but that they're being portrayed by actors with disabilities. I think that's another fundamental aspect. So, Michael, I don't know if you had any thoughts too about this column, or I know you're not as big a movie guy as I am, but or a media guy, but if you have any other thoughts on this.
You know, Kevin, I've got a subscription to Netflix, Hulu, and I've got DirecTV with every single movie channel known to man.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can tie me down, you probably will not get me to watch 3 movies a year. And I don't know why. I guess I'm so busy, and I guess I just don't take the time to watch a lot of movies. You know, I know that handicap representation has improved over the past 10 or 15, 20 years. But the one show that I really enjoy that I cannot even think of the name of it, but I believe he had cerebral palsy. It was his family. He had a brother and a sister.
Yeah, you're talking about Speechless?
Say it again?
Speechless. That's what I just mentioned.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it's great.
I really like that show.
Yeah.
That show was a really good show, and I was sad to see them take it off the air.
Right, right. It was a really big breakthrough because, the creator, Scott Silvery, he grew up with a brother who had CP, and so he based a lot of it off his own experience, but also wanted to create, you know, an original story as well. And, they hired not only a lot of actors with disabilities, but also writers and producers. And it was a really cool and just authentic representation because it wasn't, you know, the main character was not someone to be pitied. He wasn't overly inspirational either. And it was just a really, like, human character that they put on screen there who happened to have cerebral palsy, and, you know, and it was really cool to see.
Right. I think the problem, though, is that people that are in wheelchairs are going to be typecast immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you take an able-bodied person, they can put makeup on them and you would never recognize them. And if you took me out of my wheelchair you could put makeup on me and never be able to recognize me. You know, I could become a whole new character, but the wheelchair in and of itself is going to stereotype you whether you like it or not. And so I think that's the problem, is that moviegoer or movie producers and, you know, television production people, they see this. So that's why they're very hesitant to create a show, because I think they know that it probably won't go as far as a normal sitcom series would. And I think that's sad, because I think a lot of people really enjoyed that show. I think they learned a lot about CP and some of the challenges that they face. And so, you know, again, I was disappointed when they took it off the air, because it was really a good show to watch. And it was a good show that you could let your kids watch.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
It was a show. Yeah. I know that, you know, my caregiver has a 6-year-old, and he is probably one of the most compassionate children and empathetic children that I've ever seen in my life. And it's because he was raised around me. You know, he sees somebody in a wheelchair and he doesn't stare at him. He goes up and starts talking to him. You know, to him, they're just like me. And I'm just about as normal to him as his mother is. You know, I just happen to sit down all day long.
Well, and that's the thing. And going back to what you said about, you know, typecasting, is the more we normalize disability and make it, you know, as just another part of our culture, I think all the better. Then you don't have to have that concern, because then you can just be like, oh, that's an actor with disability. That's great. You know, like, and it doesn't have to be this, you know, as sensational. You know, it can just be like, that's, you know, by having more representation, I think that's the ultimate goal I think we want to move toward, is for, you know, people to not see people with disabilities as stereotypes and like to have these preconceived notions. But if we can move toward that as like normalizing disability and having it as just like a normal part of our already diverse culture, that's really what it comes down to.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Awesome. Well, yeah, I can go check that one out. And then, like I said, I have that other column about my Philly trip up today, so you can check that out as well. The last column I wanted to just touch on briefly is Michael Kasten's latest column. And, you know, Michael Kasten is one of our parent columnists. And I read this column in on one of our recent flash briefings as well, so you can check that out. But this one is titled "Ella Works Through Life's Frustrations." It was published on January 15th. And, you know, it deals with some heavy stuff. Michael has always been a writer who is not afraid to show both the positive and, you know, and the challenging aspects and the real trials that come with life and with life with SMA especially. So he is a family man who has, he and his wife have 3 kids, and their youngest daughter, Ella, has SMA. And like I said, he's always willing to be open and vulnerable and honest about whatever his family is going through. And they've had quite a year. His wife, about a year ago, had to have surgery to remove her left leg. I think it was her left, because she had had an infection that kept boiling in her foot. And unfortunately, they had to amputate. And so on top of all that, they've done, you know, dealing with Ella's medical issues, and then, you know, family life. And then also recently they learned that their dog is ill and they're going to have to put him down soon, unfortunately. So it's a pretty like solemn column, but also an important one. And I just want to read an excerpt from it real quick. That this is actually the last part of the column. And after he's kind of talking about these issues and how it's affecting everyone's emotions, he says, "We know it will take time for Lindsay," that's his wife, "to heal. And we know that our dear Potter," their dog, "will be leaving us soon. We spend each day trying to carry on. We look to each other for support, seek help from others when we need it, and try to let the little things go. We pick and choose our battles." And I think that paragraph right there really sums up a lot of Michael's story and his writing. And, you know, I appreciate that he's very open and honest about his family life and how SMA affects it, the ways it does. And I think it's a really, this column in particular is a really powerful one for other parents out there who are maybe looking for someone to empathize with and they can I've probably been in a lot of these situations, maybe not exactly, but they know those kind of feelings. And so I think it really helps when you are part of the SMA community to have that kind of connection. So, Michael, I don't know if you want to add anything to that or any takeaways you have from this column.
You know, when I read the column a little while ago, it was funny how he talked about how he had to pin the dogs up to keep them, you know, separated from actually jumping on her whenever she came home from the hospital. And I was telling you that I had two pugs at the time, and I was in the hospital for a kidney infection, and I was in the hospital for a week. And my caregivers were telling me how both Max and Shania, my pugs, were walking around the house wondering, you know, where I was. And, you know, after a while, they got really upset at the fact that I wasn't there. And so I thought it was going to be this emotional homecoming. And so I was real quiet when I came in the door because I knew they would be in my office in the chair that I've got in front of my desk. And I came around the corner just as quiet as anybody in a $70,000 electric wheelchair can be. And I peeped my head in and I looked at them, and they both kind of looked up at me, and I thought, man, they're going to jump all over me. And they looked at me like, yeah, okay, you're home. Big deal.
Yeah, whatever.
And they just went right back to sleep. It was very depressing, actually. I kind of wanted a little bit of that love.
Right.
I was
glad to put that little anecdote in there.
The trials that they go through, these are trials that everybody faces from time to time. Some face larger challenges like the ones that they're facing right now. So, yeah, it's all part of life.
It really is. And, you know, whether you're, and it's not just people in the SMA community, that's life in general. But, I thought that was a really well-written piece. And so I just wanted to highlight that. But awesome. Well, Michael, thank you for joining me today, as always. And I don't know, do you have any closing thoughts before any final thoughts before we close out?
You know, I think the only thing that I would like all of our listeners to do is to make sure that you get your ID set up on the SMA forum so you can keep up to date with regards to the conversations that we're having. We're going to be talking about RISDAPLAM quite a bit. I've got a couple of videos now out on the SMA News Today YouTube channel that are doing really well, that answer some questions that some of my personal subscribers to my YouTube channel have asked me. And again, these are my opinions, but at least, you know, we're trying to get you some answers that you could maybe talk to your family members about, talk to your doctors about, because I think the goal, or one of the goals that I've got, is, you know, to make sure that you guys have enough information so this thing just doesn't sneak up on you. You know, you've got the next 3 or 4 months to talk to your doctors about RISDAPLAM and get their opinions. They may not know very much. I mean, I would be willing to bet you, and this is going to sound kind of stupid and somewhat cocky, but I would be willing to bet you that Kevin and I know more about SMA than most certified neurologists. Because if you go to a neurologist and tell them that you have SMA, 95% of the time they're going to look at you and say, well, explain what SMA is. So we know what SMA is, and we're trying to get you the information that you can use to make a good decision as to whether or not either RISDAPLAM, Zolgensma, or Spinraza is going to be right for you. So, you know, make sure that you keep up with it, because we're giving you some great information that we hope will be information that you can use to make sure that your life is better.
Absolutely. Well, to our listeners out there, thank you, as always, for tuning in. And we'll have some more great episodes for you in the coming months. And be sure to check out all of our content, both on our main site and our forums, our YouTube channel. I know we have a lot kind of all over the place, but we have a really vibrant community, and we want to thank you all for being a part of it. So awesome. Well, we will see you all next time. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and I'm here with
Michael Morelli.
And we will see you next time. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. and be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. I'm Michael Morale, Senior Director of Multichannel Content for SMA News Today.